Welcome to Artemisia, a Chicago podcast. I'm your host, Julie Proudfoot, for raw, unedited conversations about feminism. Help us make women heroes on stage and off by making a small donation today at artemisiatheater.org, where you can listen to our podcasts, subscribe to our newsletter, and follow us on social media. You'll get thanks on our website and a personal thank you email from me. Joining me now is Tracy Baim, publisher of the Chicago Reader magazine and owner and past publisher of Windy City Times. Tracy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
Of course. You have such an amazing background in journalism, especially in Chicago. Can you tell me a little bit about why you got into it and then how that career got started?
Sure. I'm born and raised in the city of Chicago. Lived the first couple years of my life in Highland Park, but thankfully my parents moved us into the city. And I did journalism at my grammar school. I started a newsletter there and I worked on the school paper at Lane Tech High School. My stepfather worked at the Chicago Tribune for 29 years and my mother worked at a bunch of different community papers, did work at the Tribune in the 60s. And then later was managing editor of the Chicago Defender and did a lot of freelance work. So I had two different types of role models, and the community media area was safer for me to go into as an openly gay person in 1984. Being an openly gay journalist was a pretty rarefied thing. So I went into gay press, working at Gay Life newspaper and then co-founding Windy City Times in 1985.
That's a wonder. And you've done amazing work in Chicago, Tracy. Congratulations.
I'm a survivor.
What do you like most about your work?
Well, I like that every day is different. My role as publisher of The Reader takes me a little bit more removed from the journalism side. I'm more about saving the jobs of journalists than actively being one. And I thought I'd miss it a little bit more. But I think that, having been able to be lucky enough to do this work for almost four decades, I feel now helping save and make a way for the younger journalists is actually a great place to be in. I just love storytelling. In the 1980s, when I started, nobody was telling gay stories in the mainstream media in any objective way that represented our whole lives. And with HIV/AIDS devastating the community, it was really critical to get down those stories before people died, and certainly to counter all the negative that was happening in the mainstream media about our community.
Absolutely. And since you're talking about the amazing LGBTQ community, especially in Chicago, I think it's got a very specific identity and role. And you've been such an important voice for Chicago's LGBTQ community, Tracy. How do you think that community contributes to the quality of life in Chicago?
You know, there aren't a lot of comparables to communities like the LGBT community because we can hide or we can be out. We are represented in every type of group there is, every ethnic group, every racial group, every class, every job category. The most comparable group, I always say, to the LGBT community is the disabled community. The disabled community is part of every other community out there. And so that means the LGBT community is not really a community. You can't put a circle around it. It's everywhere. And that means that we have contributed to great advances in culture and science and politics, but not always as openly gay people. Especially the transgender community is far more powerful now than it's ever been. But there are still the vast majority of people that are not out in their gender identity and the identity they would like to be living in. So that's the uniqueness of our community. Most communities can't hide, although many have passed and hid and sometimes suppressed their identities at a hard emotional and community cost. But the advances in our community are entirely because of prior movements. And that's what I think is often underappreciated in my own LGBTQ community. We don't understand that the vast majority of our rights are a direct result of the fights for other rights before us. And I don't mean that just in a social context. I mean that in a legal and political context.
Sure.
For example, in the city council in the 1980s, almost all of our support came from African American and Latino aldermen. Almost all of our opposition came from white Catholic aldermen. So that even those who came before us from other communities that were marginalized knew to lift up those who were coming after them. And then, of course, we benefited directly from laws like Roe v. Wade for women.
Of course, yes.
Benefited us for the right to privacy. And Loving versus Virginia benefited us because the anti-miscegenation laws, that Loving case that overturned those was used later on when we got marriage equality. So all of these things are interconnected, and our LGBTQ community has a lot of its own racism and sexism and classism and could learn a lot from our own history that benefited from those other movements.
Oh, that is so great. Thank you for sharing all that. Tracy, you inspire me with this idea of social justice and social change and how that comes about and the interconnectedness of the movements in America that have helped us try to equalize voices and empower people to live their lives openly and contribute to their society. This is a little bit off our script, but if you don't mind addressing it, we're in a time right now where that kind of white male privilege is once again attempting to silence other voices that make up the diversity of not only Chicago, but of our country and our world. What do you think we can all do as individuals and then as collectives to try to make positive strides against that backward role?
Well, you know, it's interesting because white women here are the pivot point. And white women helped elect Trump. White women have helped on these outings that these right-wingers are having to reopen the economy prematurely. And while a vast majority of white, straight, cisgender men may not be reachable because of their own upbringings of privilege, I do think more white women can be reached to pivot and change and be better allies to the communities that have gotten that issue all along. The vast majority of black women, for example, voted against Trump, but a majority of white women voted for him. And so lumping together all white people, all black people, all people of color never works, but there's a nuance within there that you can slice off. And I think there's a stream of white women who've been misled by white men about who's really oppressing them. Who is oppressing them is not people of color or African Americans. Who is oppressing them is the white men in power, the white people in power, and corporations who are treated as people who are in power. And so the decisions on layoffs and benefits and safety nets, those are the people you need to go after, not after people who might be getting SNAP benefits or something like that that are not contributing to the problems in society. The problems in society, I have to say, are mostly caused by capitalism run amok. And also the huge systemic problems that have policed and criminalized behaviors of people of color and immigrants and undocumented immigrants. Those are the real problems that are contributing to the disproportionate impact of COVID, environmental racism, healthcare access, education. Those things are what I think white women could really have a stronger role in fixing rather than kind of going lockstep, and I mean that word in the historic sense, with these Nazi-loving, right-wing nut jobs who want to give the last gasp of control back to their peers.
I am so thrilled you brought this up. I have noticed on especially social media recently, and I won't go into the particular incidents that I have observed, but I have been, not shocked would be the wrong word, but I, as a person who is in lockstep with someone like you and the values that allow for an inclusive, happy world, and as a white woman, I am very surprised by the number of white women that are not able to look at their own contribution to what's wrong and not able to look at how they don't include and how they do exclude. So I think that's a great lesson for us all. And I think it's something that we all need to constantly every day be sensitive to and aware of and take action on, right? From voting to the way we treat people in our community to the causes that we support. And speaking of that, I want to segue to the Chicago media market and just ask you what you think is special about it.
Well, we are very fortunate in Chicago to have a really vibrant local media community. We have great you know, national broadcasts come through Chicago and TV and radio stations that are very large footprint that are owned by corporations. But we also have more than 100, and if you want to be liberal in your inclusion, probably more than 200 different kinds of news and culture outlets in Chicago. When I took over at The Reader a year and a half ago, I immediately said, I want to pivot to some of the projects I was never able to do at Windy City Times because we were smaller and more niche. The Reader had a larger footprint, and I wanted to take advantage of it to not just save The Reader, but also make a stronger media ecosystem. I always say, if The Reader's the last one standing, we're going to die too. We need a vibrant media ecosystem that is on the business and editorial side, collaborating and building each other up. So about a year ago, we started collecting data, and we were able to get a grant to hire a wonderful administrative person, Yasmin Dominguez. And she's been communicating with these 100-plus outlets, and more than 60 of them have joined a project of The Reader called the Chicago Independent Media Alliance. We've been able to write some grants, get some ads, but most importantly, we just launched 2 weeks ago a campaign called SaveChicagoMedia.org. 43 of the 60 opted into this campaign. Everything we do is free and opt-in. And it includes some very small media outlets that are print and others that are newer online nonprofits. We are all very different from one another. You have Cartemquin Films and the North Lawndale Community News and City Bureau and La Raza, The Crusader, of course, The Reader and Windy City Times. And the campaign launched 2 weeks ago, and it has two more weeks to go. It ends June 5th. We've raised about $34,000, I just checked an hour ago, from individual donors. And then we've also raised $60,000 from foundations to match. So we want to raise $60,000 from individuals, $60,000 from the foundations, and maybe even a little bit more. To then it goes back to the media outlets. Some of it gets split evenly across, and then some of it is based on what each individual outlet raises through the campaign. So people can give either way. What I've been really pleased with is that the vast majority of people, I think around 80%, are going in and giving a donation and saying, just give it to everybody equally. I wasn't sure if that would happen because we're each pushing people to the site. I thought if The Reader sent somebody to the site, people would say, oh, I'm going to give to The Reader. But pleasantly surprised that most people are just saying, no, here's my $100. Give everybody a piece of that. And so that will really be a significant contribution for some of these smaller outlets. So to me, it's the tip of the iceberg. If we cooperate with one another, we actually bring more resources into the community. It may seem counterintuitive that The Reader's trying to raise money for competitors and other people in the media, but I know that from my experience of fundraising, that some people give to individuals and some people like to give to collaborations. So some of these foundations that gave us money would not have given that money directly to The Reader. They already might have given us some, or they wouldn't directly fund a media outlet, but they like to fund collaborations. So I feel like most of this is very new money. And if we were to do it on a very large scale in 2021 with more than 3 weeks planning, we could really not only, I think it would serve two purposes. One is to raise a lot of money, but the second is to educate people about what the role of journalists are and who those journalists are themselves. I want a campaign around I Am Chicago Journalism in create something about each of these outlets that talks about the journalists that work for them. And some of these journalists have been working for decades in community media with no attention to their really vital work from authentic community voices serving neighborhoods of Chicago. So this is really a pilot, and I think it's already been successful, but I want to make it far more successful so that we can go to the foundation and government world and say, look, if you help us lift this up higher and more visible next year, we can bring a whole lot more into the ecosystem.
Congratulations, Tracy, to all of you that started CIMA and to this amazing fundraiser, which if folks want to make a donation, they go to SaveChicagoMedia.org, correct?
That's correct, SaveChicagoMedia.org, and you have two ways to give. One at the top, you can give a donation that gets split among them all. Otherwise, you can go below and click on some of the outlets and then click to the next page and pick how much you want to give to each of them.
I think what you're saying, too, about not only this great campaign that's happened this year, but its future and its impact going forward is the idea that Chicago has all of these companies. So when I was preparing for this interview, Tracy, I looked up the different media outlets that are part of the Chicago Independent Media Alliance, and I was reading about their missions, and I was coming across all these amazing social justice messages like transforms media and society, impactful, equitable, responsive to the public, alternative and authentic, serving marginalized communities. They were all unique and they all had fascinating individual voices, but what really struck me was this collective commitment to social justice. Why is a media like that for the people by the people? If you had to sum it up for us, why is that so important right now and going forward?
Well, the thing is this, I know this in my heart because in 1984, when I started working at Gay Life newspaper, we only had For Us, By Us. We only had, and this was pre-internet, we only had our weekly newspaper to communicate all of the things going on in our community, the good and the bad. You know, gay people have, there's bad gay people and good gay people, I'm gonna tell you. And to shine a lens on your own community from your own voice, I saw that from day one. I also experienced it because my mother, as a white woman, was managing editor of the Defender for 10 years. So I used to go in, at 10 years old, I would go in and I would write a kids consumer column for my mom. And I would go and see the plant where they laid out the paper. And I could see how important the Chicago Defender was to the people who were producing it, as well as delivering it and reading it. All these papers, all these online outlets and these podcasts, whether they serve 1,000 people or 100,000 people, those folks are getting news by communities that often don't get covered in a comprehensive way by the mainstream. We mostly have reporters that parachute into communities when there's a crisis, and they don't have the authentic sources and connections to cover that community well. So the benefit I've had in working in community media is I can see it through the LGBTQ lens, and then I can definitely pivot and see it, because we even did it at my papers. We did a publication called Black Lines. It was for the African-American LGBTQ community. We hired an entirely African-American LGBTQ staff, and they wrote by and for those communities. And we did a Latino one as well. And I could see so upfront and personal how clearly people responded to pieces by and for them. And so this was an easy leap for me to make to understand how important, even though we feel the reader serves anybody in Chicago, we can't cover it all. And we certainly can't cover it all the best way it can be covered. You know, 14 papers can cover the same story, and we'll all cover it from a different angle, depending on who that reporter is, their sources, the time they put into it. So the more the better. And we're working with the local media association nationally to do a pilot in Chicago with mainstream and community media to try to show those kind of collaborations as well on specific topic areas. The first topic area is going to be COVID-19 and its impact. But other cities that have done this have done it, let's say on the issue of homelessness, where all year, all the outlets commit to doing deep dives on an issue like homelessness, or poverty, or healthcare access, or education. So we're hoping this collaborative also is a good pilot this year. SEMA members, again, can opt in, no charge or anything like that. But we also hope to bring some grants to it so that they can have some funding for the reporters working on these projects.
It's just wonderful, Tracy. It's a great vision for the city. And speaking of post-pandemic, in other words, not post, but us venturing out again in Illinois and dealing with the effects of the pandemic on our community, on our jobs, on our quality of life, on our media, it's also important right now that we are in this together. And I think CIMA and the SaveChicagoMedia.org and all the efforts you're making really inspire all of us. So I just wanted to share that because it's really a time when us joining hands is what it's all about.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good collaborations happening within the theater community, the music venue community, and you know, now this is for the media community. I think these kind of collaborations are really the future if we're going to get through tough times. And you know, regardless of the outcomes of COVID-19, we know that there will be other kinds of tough times facing our communities. And again, regardless of who's in the White House, there are always struggles to be had. And if we do the collaborations during these times, they can help us in the good times as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tracy, if people want to find out more about you, where is the best place they can find you on the web?
Well, I don't have any kind of blogs or anything like that, but if you search my name on the Windy City Times website, there's hundreds of articles I've written over the years and editorials and things like that. If you search on Amazon, I've got about, I think, 11 or 12 books out that I've either written or co-written on LGBTQ history, probably the most comprehensive one is called Out and Proud in Chicago. Women and Children First Bookstore also carries most of my titles or can get them from me. And, you know, there's a lot myriad of things if you search my name on there. But I would rather people search safechicagomedia.org, chicagoreader.com, or windycitytimes.com to find out more about kind of the work that's being done. It's just, I've been so lucky to do the work I've wanted to do since I was 10 years old, journalism in whatever form that might be. So I just want to make sure that those jobs are still there in the future for people like me. We have quite a lot of 20-year-old, 20-somethings working for us here at The Reader, and I'm inspired by their commitment every day to keep this work going too.
Tracy, thank you so much. I'm delighted that you honored us and came on the podcast, and we will be sure to continue to promote SaveChicagoMedia.org on all of Artemisia's emails and social media. Thank you so much for being with us, Tracy.
Thanks so much, Julie.
To learn more about Tracy Baim, go to chicagoreader.com or windycitytimes.com. And to learn more about Save Chicago Media and to make a donation, visit savechicagomedia.org. Go to artemisiatheater.org to listen to our podcasts, subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on social media, and make a small donation. Your gift will help make women heroes, and you'll get thanks on our website and a personal thank you email from me. I'm your host, Julie Proudfoot. Thank you for listening. Join me next time. Let's keep the conversation going.